People's Tribune Radio is on the air. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. On this edition of PTR, you can believe the hype because our special guest is the former Minister of Information for Public Enemy, Professor Griff.
I wrote a song some time ago called Common Thread. And I was basically explaining to this young lady that was interviewing me, I said the same thing, that same situations that I'm going through here in Atlanta, brothers are going through in St. Louis, Detroit, Watts, in Africa, in Asia. It's a common thread. Even though we don't know one another, it's a common thread that runs through us. And so in speaking and taking on that responsibility, I'm really trying to raise generations up. This can't be confined to just my generation.
People's Tribune Radio is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, who also publish the newspaper People's Tribune, Tribuno del Pueblo. Stay tuned for contact and ordering information at the end of the program. Back in the day, prior to the worldwide explosion of hip-hop music, there was rap. And then there was Public Enemy. Breaking on the scene with mad beats and hardcore political lyrics, Public Enemy would not and could not be ignored. Chuck D, Flavor Flav, Terminator X, and Professor Griff put pen to pad, picked up microphones, and spun the wax while kicking out the facts line of what it meant to be a black man in America. Now out pursuing solo endeavors, today on People's Tribune Radio, our guest is Professor Griff, the former Minister of Information for Public Enemy. He was interviewed by Ebon Dooley at the studios of WRFG Radio in Atlanta, Georgia.
Let's just jump right into it. I know that you have a new album out, new CD out called And the Word Becomes Flesh.
And the Word Became Flesh is directly from the scripture. And basically, it simply means that if we're going to espouse a particular philosophy or ideology, we need to become that. I think Elijah Muhammad said it better. He gave us a degree. I believe it's the 11th degree, in the 1 to 14. He says, have you not heard that your word shall be bond? And the answer is yes, my word is bond, and bond is life. And I'll give my life before my word shall fail. Mm-hmm. If that is true, then a lot of the things that the entertainers are talking about, we have to make manifest. We have to bring that into a reality. A lot of the issues that I deal with on this particular album, I've been dealing with for over the last 10 to 15 years, be it with Public Enemy or my solo projects. And all I'm trying to do is have the word take on flesh and become reality.
What do you assess as being the impact of rap music on both the current political scene and historically the impact that Public Enemy had on the development of political issues in this country?
Well, I think it weighs heavy. I think it was designed to do such. Mm-hmm. Not that we as the architects designed it that way, but a lot of times things tend to take its own course. When you get CNN, ABC, NBC talking about the effects of hip-hop, when you have McDonald's commercials, Sprite commercials, multinational corporations using hip-hop to sell their products, then you know you have something there. So I think they, on the other side of the fence, understand its potential and its power. We just don't understand it. A lot of times, as Del Jones says in his book Culture Bandits, we tend to let our enemy use our culture against us, robbing us of the beauty of what we have to offer, not only ourselves, but the world as a whole. Like Dr. Francis Chris Welsing says, we shouldn't use words that confuse the brain computer. If that's so, then how do we define politics? And then we have to define politics and how it works for us. So if we say what's the politics of hip-hop as it relates to the global scene, then we have to look at what the rappers are saying.
Let me define politics as the utilization of your ideas to get people to move in a concerted fashion,
see,
okay?
Right, that's deep, because now when you say my ideas, I have to hook up with like-minded people mm-hmm. in order to get my idea across. Mm-hmm. So if the idea on the other side of the fence is let's talk about degrading women, let's talk about the acquisition of wealth, mm-hmm. let's talk about who did who and how much time I spent in prison, how many bricks I'm bringing in the country, all the things that the rappers talk about nowadays. Is that one common mind? Did they get together and say, we're going to talk about this? It seemed like it just automatically happens for some reason. And I always say this. If those cats can get together, how come the positive rappers can't get together just to counteract it?
Mm-hmm. It appears to me, as an observer, that the political content or the social content of the music isn't quite at the same level that it was, let's say, when Public Enemy was on the scene.
Those young, innovative artists are out there. They're just not being heard.
Mm-hmm.
We always say, you know, why can't Common's album get the light of day? Or Goody Mob, or some Dead Prez.
Mm-hmm.
You know, why can't their album get the light of day and get the rotation and the play that a lot of the other albums get? Simply because I think it's an organized, strategic plan to keep these kind of artists below the radar.
Public Enemy had a tremendous influence on a whole generation of young people, even in terms of impact on white youth.
Well, when you have a whole generation of not only young black kids, white, Hispanic, and in different, crossing different gender lines,
mm-hmm.
different racial lines, and a lot of times in different countries. We had cats translating our lyrics into different languages, which was very dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand what I'm saying? To the quote-unquote the establishment. The word of mouth, we call it African grapevine, that it's a lot larger than we think it is. And even in the translating, unlike the King James Version of the Bible, even in the translating to different languages, the message doesn't get lost. It's all about solidarity, one people, one mind.
It appears that we are really growing to a world culture. Globalization is happening in terms of both economic and political things, and the impact of rap music in terms of forging a new global culture is something I want you to comment on.
Multinational corporations are using hip-hop in such a way where it's not even recognizable. You're talking about a culture that grew out of the streets of the Bronx, that grew out of a need to be able to express ourselves on the street corner. You're talking about turning a garbage can over and beating on it to try to communicate a certain idea to a certain people about a certain thing. And like Chuck D says, hip-hop, rap music, is the CNN for black people, for the black community. So if you look at the definition of music, which is a universal language, and if music is a universal language, then how come different cultures and different people can't speak to one another? Do you understand what I'm saying? I think it's a beautiful thing. Like a smile. You don't smile in a particular language, you smile because it's universal.
Yeah.
And that's how we view hip-hop, but we need to pull it back on its course.
Yeah, because one of the dangers is that the multinational corporations may try to utilize hip-hop to turn it on its head, and rather than it being a force for liberation, try to utilize it, since it does have that universal appeal, to get other messages across other than the ones that the people who are the creators of it are trying to get across.
Yes, and it's a very dangerous thing, because if you look how hip-hop affects the movie industry, you don't find the positive rappers that came up with the positive message in the movies. You know, this is not to downgrade anyone or to talk about anyone, but it's an obvious fact. Mm-hmm. If you look at the movies that are coming out, all of the hip-hop and rap artists that are talking about murder, 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 shoot 'em up, bang, bang, let's rob this, kill this, and steal this, those are the ones that are in the movies. The Dr. Dre, the Snoop Dogg, the Ja Rules. These are the ones that are in the movies. So is it a deliberate plan that's being hatched behind in some smoke-filled back room by the movie industry? Or is it just coincidental? Now, I'm not a person that believes in coincidence. Nothing happens by chance. You know, if you hear it and see it in politics, it was designed that way. But by whom? And are these people, like Del Jones said, are these people culture bandits? Are these people stealing the culture and turning it against us? And I think we need to rally behind an ideology, a philosophy, and we need to get our culture back.
What's the status of the independent movement in terms of distribution of the culture, the creation of it, having final say-so on the whole product? Have we made any progress in this area, or do the large corporations still maintain control that they used to have and that we hear so much complain about?
I think a lot of times it has to do with the artists and their individual situations. For example, if I could just speak about myself.
Yeah, please do.
With this project and the Word Became Flesh, I had total control from cover to cover, everything that's said, everything that's written, how it looks, how it sounds. I had total control. That's rare. And I think simply because they gave me that kind of control, simply because they look at me as a veteran in this rap game. They can trust that I will turn in a project. Not only did they trust it, they paid me up front.
Well, that's unusual.
That is rare. You don't find that in music nowadays.
Now, I know here in Atlanta, we have a lot of independent musicians who are putting things out on their own, who are trying to distribute things on their own. What is your assessment of that particular movement of totally independent young musicians who are trying to do message music and trying to do everything on their own? Does that have a future?
Yes, very much so, especially with what a lot of the brothers and sisters are doing over the Internet. The Internet is reaching people globally, and we have a global hip-hop community now. A lot of times you may not hear a rapper from Lubbock, Texas, or in the ghettos of Paris, France, or, you know, in the ghettos of Brixton in England. Now we get a chance to hear it. Especially with the new technology, now that you can just go to a computer and upload your music. Someone across the other side of the globe can download it and listen to you. Public Enemy, there's a poison going on. That's how we did our thing. We went on 2 or 3 world tours with that. We put it up on the Internet, sold it over the Internet, and we sent out an e-flyer to every promoter and everyone that can download it off of rapstation.com, and we were there within a month, and everyone knew about it.
You know, there's been quite a bit of movement recently to prohibit the utilization of the Internet.
Right.
We're talking about MP3 and the whole controversy around that.
Yeah.
A lot of stations, our station included, come under pressure not to stream our music. Your opinion of what's happening with regard to that?
Well, I think it's one of those uncontrollable kind of maneuvers that just happen. It's not like we sat around like this and planned it. The Internet's available. We said, okay, well, if the record companies won't sign me, I'll set up a website, I'll take the website, I'll put my music on the website, and I'll send the word out that my music is there, and I'll have the people come to me. The multinational corporations looked at that as like, wait a minute, we can't make money that way, because now it's free. Information is free. I have to find a way to be able to control that. So guess how they did it? They allow the porno industry to thrive over the Internet. And since they don't want to mess that up because their hand is in that, and they don't want to mess that money thing up, that exchange of money and ideas, they'll let that flourish. But when you talk about RFG, when you talk about free radio, when you talk about free ideas and philosophy and ideologies coming across the airways that they can't control, oh, that's a danger. Because now we can start an underground movement without even moving from your bedroom. You could have one individual talk to the world now, and that's very, very dangerous.
Somebody has commented that the Internet itself is inherently anti-capitalist, that it is a free kind of thing, and left to its own devices, it would result in the free sharing of ideas, information, and what have you, and that what we see now is a futile attempt of the old guard to try to squelch the development of the new technology.
Well, I like to talk to that individual because there's companies making billions of dollars utilizing the Internet. It's just that the right people are not making the money. If we made the money, we'd be able to get these ideas across. You understand what I'm saying? Now, we wouldn't have to make a tape of this and send it to California and send it to England, and because right now we'd be live on the Internet, on the air, and people can record it themselves.
That's what I was talking about, because left to its own devices, it could be free, it could be easily distributed. It wouldn't be the kind of thing where they have restricted access and where people are making billions of dollars on it. I think that the future of the Internet and the future of this kind of technology will evolve toward a freer and freer application of it on a global scale.
Right, but you do have organizations out there that do censorship on a large scale.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, they're sitting in the smoke-filled back rooms trying to figure out how do we get a hold of this internet thing because it's running rampant. It's not running rampant for us. It's a great thing for us simply because we're able to communicate with one another. For them, they want to be able to control. For example, there is, on September 11th, something very tragic happened. And it touched the global community like it touched individuals. Even in this room, even within the sound of my voice, it touched individuals. Now, the information that I received over the internet diametrically opposes what is actually being said on NBC, ABC, and CBS, and CNN, and even C-SPAN to a certain degree.
And that's absolutely true. I want to change the subject just slightly because we do have some time constraints.
Right.
I know you're working on a book.
Yes, sir.
Tell us something about the project, what led you to it, and about, you know, the how you branch out into various aspects utilizing your creativity.
Well, the name of the book is called Behind Enemy Minds. That has a dual meaning. What led me to do the book, everywhere I go, my reputation precedes me. I run into people in the hallway, and I say, may I speak to, you know, Mr. Smith, or I came to see Mr. Smith. What was your name? Professor Griff. Oh, you're Professor Griff? Because they don't expect this 5'5", 142-pound guy that looks pretty pleasant. They're expecting this big guy, you know, with horns and a tail with a pitchfork. Because they've put this word out about me that he's mean, he's this, that, and the other. He's very whatever. And, you know, contrary to popular belief, I think I'm a nice guy. But that led me to put out a book, not with the whole idea of this self-aggrandizement, not talking about myself, but what I did was I'm doing a critical analysis of lyrical content and social responsibility. I really truly believe that if I sit down my pen and my pad and write stuff, EMI Capital has given me a platform to espouse my views, my thinking, my thoughts, my ideology, that I think I'm held accountable to the people. If I'm going to write from my ideology, when I put the pen to the pad, I have to keep the people in mind. But I'm a very studious individual, and I write from that. Uh-huh. A lot of guys don't write from that. And what I'm doing in the book is basically I'm critiquing every lyric that I've ever written from the day I started writing.
Do you also critique the lyrics of others?
No, simply because I don't want others to think that I'm this holy kind of individual, this self-righteous kind of individual, and that I'm letting the gauntlet down and bringing the hammer down on them. I'd rather critique myself first to give them an idea of what they can do in their own particular careers, in their own lives. I wrote a song called Verbal Intercourse, and I explain that we can have intercourse. It doesn't necessarily have to be a sexual intercourse. It's a verbal thing. You understand what I'm saying? And I critique that song line for line. And I let them know, especially the younger ones that are coming up, viewing me as an icon, viewing me as a veteran in this game. If I let them see me critique myself in my own lyrics, that's giving them away. That's saying, okay, you know something? I can write better lyrics, more deeper lyrics, more profound lyrics. And I can be very critical of myself. I don't have to go along with what's going on just to sell a record. You can sell records and be very positive and very thought-provoking.
So many artists have the attitude that this is a career, this is a way for me to advance myself as an individual, it's all about the money. What led you in your experiences to turn your back on that kind of attitude and to develop a true social responsibility as evidenced in all of your work up until this time?
Well, I think Prince said it better. He says what he's hearing nowadays is disposable music. I want your children's children to get together with my children's children and be able to pick this up and get something from it. A brother that I work with, Marcus Effinger, we call him Society. We get together and write a lot. He looks at it like we're writing to unborn children. And that's how I like to view it, because I am a responsible individual. I'm responsible for a community. I'm responsible for unborn children. Even though I don't know his children, you know, I'm still held responsible. You understand what I'm saying?
Exactly.
So I wrote a song some time ago called Common Thread. And I was basically explaining to this young lady that was interviewing me, I said, the same thing, that's same situations that I'm going through here in Atlanta, brothers are going through in St. Louis, Detroit, Watts, in Africa, in Asia. It's a common thread. Even though we don't know one another, it's a common thread that runs through us. And so in speaking and taking on that responsibility, I'm really trying to raise generations up. This can't be confined to just my generation. Mm-hmm. I have a song, a commercial on it called AIDS, A-I-D-S, Africans in Deep Shit. That's not only confined to just me or black people or white people or Jews or Gentiles or Muslims or Christians. That affects everyone. Mm-hmm. Everyone in this room can attest to the fact that we know someone's life that's been affected by the AIDS epidemic. So that's something that's a lot larger than Professor Griff. So I'm held responsible to take that bit of information that may have been passed on to me from this sister right here or this brother right here. That's not mine. I'm just passing it on. I'm just being a vehicle for that. Public Enemy is a lot larger than individuals.
One of the things that you mentioned was the utilization of a rap or hip-hop sort of as a binding force, cutting across gender, cutting across race and all of that. When hip-hop first came out, people said, oh, this is just a fad.
Right.
This is just something that's going to stop, you know, overnight. To what do you attribute the impact and power and lasting effect of rap music?
As R&B stays where it's at in that stalemate, I think a lot of times pressure tends to bring about certain things. When we're under pressure, we think we're a lot more innovative, because a lot of times when you're under pressure, you think of innovative ways to come out from under that pressure. I think rap music was that knob that you turned to release the steam. So in rap music, just like with the last poets, Gil Scott-Heron and the Watts Prophets, they talked about a lot of things, and they could talk about it because they was in a genre of music that didn't confine them to measures and verses and intros and outros. R&B music had us confined. We could only talk about love, what's between the sheets, who's doing who. So when rap music came on the scene, I think it was a child, not an illegitimate child, but it was a child of the poets. So once we put that, those African traditional kind of vibes and those beats to it, we kind of tapped into not only your chakras, but we tapped into something that's been laying dormant among our people, especially for a long time, because we've been robbed of that. So the African drum beat behind the spoken word brought it back. Now you got to keep in mind, we have to define our own reality. Who called it hip hop, and why did they define it as rap? So I did a piece called Rap, Real African People. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? Tapping into its origin, where it came from, and how do we best, you know, keep it alive. We never in our, well, we very, very rarely do it, give credit to where credit is due. Those poets that came before us really laid a base, which we need to do just programs on them alone. Gil Scott-Heron, when I was coming up, I didn't know who the man was, but I heard it. Yeah. And it stuck with me till today. So when you hear my project, you'll hear Gil Scott. You'll hear the last poets. They laid a base for hip-hop and rap music.
Well, that's one of the things that I've observed about it, is that it does pay homage to what went before. You know, the whole thing about sampling and all of that. Rap does not appear to be something that considers itself as brand new,
right,
and existing on its own outside the context of the history of the culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's one of the reasons for its staying power. Talk about what you think the future of the music is, and what direction do you see it going?
I think the future of music, music being a universal language, I think a lot of times it's the same ingredients but different icing. I think the future of it is going to be a lot more widespread in reference to ideas being translated. Even right now, as the global events take place and they're unfolding, the popular opinion of our president is changing. Now, but you have to understand, there's two sides to that coin. The popular opinion is changing. You may get a cat like Dr. Dre, who I've heard did this anti-Bin Laden song, which I'm diametrically opposed to.
Mm-hmm.
Mao Zedong said, no investigation, no right to speak. Do your research first. You were the same guy dressing up in drag a minute ago. You were the same guy that was talking about F the police. Mm-hmm. And now you took off your NWA shirt and you're putting on a God Bless America. But if we brought you before these microphones, can you give us a critical analysis of the 911 attack in order for you to turn around to write an anti-Bin Laden song?
That's another thing that is beginning to happen. I noticed that some mainstream rap musicians are identifying themselves with the Democratic Party,
right.
The current President Bush, with policies that are emanating from Washington. And then on the other hand, you have artists such as yourself, mm-hmm. who are on the other side of that whole thing. And it appears to be very clear demarcation and a very clear battle going with that. As a final wrap-up, where do you see that developing, and why do you think at this particular time there are so many of those mainstream people consciously identifying with the establishment?
No, I think they're unconsciously. it may appear to be conscious, but it's not.
Absolutely,
I think
correct.
They're getting this from like I said, from the smoke-filled back rooms of these record companies, egging them on to do this kind of song because we need to be more patriotic. Mm-hmm. Do you understand what I'm saying?
And that's where the money is.
Right. And that's the bottom line. Yeah. It's like, okay, well, these people are not necessarily patriotic, but because it's the popular line, it's the popular slogan in America today to be patriotic. We'll have rappers like Lil' Kim coming out still half clad, still half nude, wearing the red, white, and blue.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big contradiction. You still want to sell sex, but you want to be patriotic. It's a way to make money, huh? But I think that's the bottom line.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line.
We've been talking to Professor Griff here, and it's we got to come back and do it again.
Yes, sir, definitely.
This is part one.
I didn't even get a chance to open the book.
When is the book coming out?
Well, I'm towards the end of it now, and as you know, my reputation precedes me. I'm trying to find someone that's going to actually put it out. I don't know.
Yeah.
I can honestly say I'm going to write it. I'm going to put it in some different hands and see where it goes from there.
Well, we have something to look forward to, you know?
Yes, sir.
In addition to your lyrics, I'm sure that your book will also be a bestseller.
Inshallah.
And we thank you here at WRFG for you coming by, spending some time with us, sharing your thoughts. We need more artists like yourself. And I think your book may go a long way in creating more artists like
yourself. We're just trying to reach those that are unborn, to reach those that are coming up that have a warped perception and warped view of what music really is supposed to represent and mean to us as a people.
Professor Griff, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Musical artist, writer, and former Minister of Information for the rap group Public Enemy, Professor Griff. He was interviewed by Ebon Dooley at the studios of WRFG Radio in Atlanta, Georgia. That's it for People's Tribune Radio. PTR is produced by the League of Revolutionaries for a New America. The League advocates for a cooperative society where the very technologies that are now being used to displace millions of workers worldwide are used for the benefit of humanity as a whole. If you'd like more information about the League or our print or other audio publications, you can contact us at 1-800-691-6888. 1-800-691-6888 or on the internet at www.lrna.org. My name is Mike Thornton. On behalf of the League of Revolutionaries for a New America, we hope you've enjoyed today's program and hope that you'll join us next time for another edition of People's Tribune Radio.